Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and thank you for joining me on this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up in just a moment, O come, let us adore him. Pope Benedict urges us all to seek the true meaning of Christmas. Mary's boy child, Jesus Christ, the true story of the Nativity, comes to a big screen near you. And peace on earth, goodwill to all men. But what about those who'll spend this Christmas serving in the war zones of the world? Welcome to the programme. In these days leading up to Christmas, let us not be distracted by all the trappings, but let us seek the true meaning of Christ's birth in Bethlehem. That was Pope Benedict's message at his weekly general audience this Wednesday, as he greeted thousands of pilgrims and visitors who came to join him for the occasion in the Paul VI Audience Hall here in the Vatican. My colleague Emma McCarthy has all the details.
Queues started forming around St. Peter's before dawn in anticipation of Pope Benedict's final general audience before Christmas.
Dear brothers and sisters, the Lord is at hand. Come, let us adore him.
As was to be expected, Wednesday's catechesis focused on the Christmas mystery and the need for Christians of goodwill worldwide to defend it from corruption.
In these last days of Advent, the liturgy invites us to draw close to the stable of Bethlehem, contemplating in awe the birth of the Redeemer. Full of joy and thanksgiving, we recall how the creature of the universe, out of love, came to dwell among us. For many centuries, Israel had awaited the Messiah, imagining him as a powerful and victorious leader. Instead, the Savior was born in absolute poverty, and the true light who enlightens all people was not accepted by his own. Do we still await the Savior?
Pope Benedict said that today many consider God irrelevant, even an obstacle to success.
Today many consider God irrelevant, an obstacle to success. Even believers sometimes seek tempting but illusory shortcuts to happiness. And yet, perhaps even because of this confusion, humanity seeks a Savior and awaits the coming of Christ, the one true Redeemer.
The Pope affirmed that we Christians, through our witness against those who offer a cheap salvation, defend the truth of Christmas, which, he says, Christ brings to every person of goodwill.
Let us then with Mary and Joseph prepare to open our hearts to the Lord, who is at hand. Do not be distracted by the trappings. Be watchful and pray. In this way, our homes will welcome Jesus with faith and love. May these final days of Advent be full of spiritual wonder to you and your loved ones, especially those who may be in difficulty or suffering. I extend my best wishes for a happy and holy Christmas.
And my thanks to Emma McCarthy for that report on Pope Benedict's weekly general audience. It's still one of the best known and best loved stories of all times, a story we celebrate every year at this time, the story of a baby boy born to a young Jewish girl in a stable because there was no room at the inn. The story of Christ's birth in Bethlehem has been the subject of countless works of art over the centuries, from the most ancient icons and sculptures to the most modern paintings and installations. And now Hollywood, it seems, is also fast waking up to the enduring popularity of such religious-themed films. Following on from the success of Mel Gibson's 2004 film about Christ's passion and death, this Christmas season sees another major US film studio presenting a movie focused on the events leading up to Jesus' birth in Bethlehem. The Nativity Story, released at the beginning of December, made history by being the first film ever to stage its world premiere here in the Vatican. More than 7,000 people attended the screening in the Paul VI Audience Hall, including the director, Catherine Hardwicke, the two producers, the screenwriter, and several of the leading actors. It was a benefit event, and contributions from the premiere went towards the construction of a school in an Israeli village near Nazareth, whose population includes Christians, Muslims, and Druze. My colleague Susie Hodges has been taking a closer look.
There shall arise a star.
All of them talk of this prophetic king, this man who will defeat me.
The greatest of kings, born in the most humble of places.
Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will give birth to a son.
The Nativity Story film presents the dramatic events during the year in Mary's life that culminates with the birth of Jesus. It shows Mary and Joseph's journey, the visit of the shepherds and wise men to the stable, Herod's brutal response with the massacre of the innocents, and the flight of the Holy Family to Egypt. It was the first feature film ever to have its premiere at the Vatican, and director Catherine Hardwicke gave her reaction to this decision.
It's an amazing honour, you know, beyond what we could dream of. I don't know what to think. It's incredible honour, and I'm very excited and feel, you know, very happy that it's a benefit for the school in Israel, and I hope it brings a beautiful message to the world about unity. And we tried to make this movie more about unity and not so divisive as other films.
But what prompted her in the first place to direct a movie on the subject of Christ's birth?
Well, I think the idea, the way Mike Rich wrote the screenplay, which drew me in, you know, to Joseph with a problem, like his wife, his fiance comes back pregnant and he knows he's not the father. How would any man feel? You know, a man would feel like shocked and surprised. He loves this woman, and yes, he's religious, and he wants to believe her, but there's a whole moral dilemma. So all those issues, we have issues like those now. We want to do some things that nobody else thinks is the right idea, but we have to believe it in our hearts and take that leap of faith.
Elizabeth, why is it me God has asked? I am nothing. A husband has been chosen for me. How was he to believe this?
With Mary being the central character, Hardwicke told us what special qualities she was looking for in the actress who played the mother of Jesus.
Well, I thought, you know, she should look like a beautiful Mediterranean girl with the beautiful olive-colored skin and feel like she's from the area and very young and vulnerable, but with a beautiful heart and like an inner peace in a way that she could handle these difficult things, that she would have a sense of her own internal spirituality.
Guatemalan-born actor Oscar Isaac played the part of Joseph, and he talks about how he prepared himself for his role.
I mean, I grew up with the story, so I knew the basic idea of what had happened, but I never understood what an important role Joseph played in the story. So for me, it was important to figure out what it meant to be a young Jewish man in the first century, and I worked with the tools of the time, with technical advisors, teaching me, you know, how to make the walls of my house, the staff that I use in the film I made, you know. And so the relationship with the land and work was very important. And then, you know, what it meant to be a devoutly Jewish and what it meant to have that kind of a personal relationship with God. And then after that, it was about his humility. You know, obviously, in the paintings, we joke around saying he's always behind the sheep. But I think the idea of why they put him there is to show his humility. And that was the most key to him. And so figuring out how to open up his heart because he loves her so much. And I think that allows him to do amazing things because of his love.
I ask not your home, but any place you have. Please, is there a place for us?
And my thanks there to Susie Hodges for that report on the film The Nativity Story. Now, Christmas is above all a time for sharing, not just the presents, the food and the drink, but above all sharing the company of our closest families and friends. It's a time to relax and put the cares of the world behind us for a few days as we relive the miracle of the Holy Family in that stable in Bethlehem. But what about those who are far from their families and friends this Christmas? Those for whom the words peace on earth, goodwill to all men ring rather hollow, perhaps, as they patrol some of the most dangerous war zones of the world. What comfort can service men and women find in the familiar prayers and Christmas carols that somehow bring them closer to other Christians marking this same feast in cathedrals, churches and chapels all over the globe?
Our people do turn to church on these occasions. They might not be filling church throughout the year, but on these key moments like Christmas and Easter, and perhaps when there is some reason within their military unit for them to get together, they do appreciate coming together to sing a few carols, to say a few prayers, to reflect upon the duty that they carry out on our behalf to make peace and bring peace and maintain peace in different nations.
As Bishop to the Armed Forces in Great Britain, Bishop Thomas Byrne has met with service men and women in Iraq and other frontline places where British troops are stationed. He's very well aware of the problems they face over the festive season and the way in which their chaplains can provide vital support in the most difficult moments.
Yes, indeed. I mean, any absence from home is a difficulty for our service people and their families and loved ones back at home, but this is heightened in a special way when they are away over the Christmas period. And Christmas, of course, being a time for families and young people, they feel it even more, because if you're in a military camp in the middle of the desert or in Iraq or in the difficult mountainous regions of Afghanistan, you do miss the normal domestic pleasures and relaxation of being at home.
Are there any particular initiatives that are going on that you know of this year in Britain to try and keep morale up over this time?
There are always, at this time of year, or that time of year of Christmas, but also during the year, there are opportunities for making contact with home by telephone, and also there are improved email facilities, access to the internet, so that there can be exchange with people at home, and even direct changes given the telephone nature of computer technology nowadays also. And that's very, very much appreciated. I mean, I do know of one person who has a very small tape recorder, and he will record every second of the phone call that he has with his family, and then afterwards he plays it privately to himself in his own quarters, and that means a lot to him.
You must encounter in this situation soldiers who perhaps suffer from quite serious depression, maybe particularly at this time of year, as you say, given the way that Christmas means so much for families. Do you have to deal with this on a regular basis?
Not on a regular basis. I think it's true to say that our servicemen and women nowadays do witness some terrible atrocities in various parts of the world, and they need somehow afterwards to be able to release their pent-up emotions, their frustrations, and sometimes their disappointments that they were not able to do anything effectively at that time to relieve a difficult situation. So they need to talk to somebody afterwards. And, of course, their chaplain is present. He knows them already. They know him. There's no need to have any icebreakers. And they can, in confidence, feel able to talk to him about what is bothering them. And that very often turns them round and helps them to go back into the job that they're there for and cope for a while longer, although they may come back again for further conversations with the chaplain. And they may also require some medical support, and that is, of course, available to them also. And I think there's a sort of teamwork available to let them feel that different people are concerned about them and want them to function as well as they can and get over these difficulties.
Now, as you say, in places like Iraq, soldiers will be witnessing the most terrible atrocities, civilians dying in the streets, in their homes and so on. Does this ever lead, in your experience, to a real loss of faith, a crisis of faith, if you like, in previously convinced Christians?
I've never come across that, personally. I have come across the opposite, where people have found, strangely, in these difficult circumstances, where they have found something within themselves that says, what is the meaning of life? Why am I here? What contribution can I make? And they generously and selflessly reach out to others over and beyond the reason why they are there. For example, there's nothing more than our service people like to do with them when the opportunity presents itself to get involved in some local charity work, particularly if it is, again, among children and young people, because obviously they're deprived of access to their own children and families while they are away. And you'll find them going out and about among the people of, say, Basra. They'll visit a local school, they'll paint it, renovate it, add a children's playground, and they'll spend a whole day in the heat of the sun and sweat of the brow doing all these things, and they'll play football with the kids. And kids are so infectious with their good humour and their naturalness that this means a lot to them. Of course, there's the downside of it, that once or twice on the way back to base, a hidden explosive device at the side of the road has destroyed Land Rover or lives. And that's something, again, that's terribly disappointing to them, that they've tried to reach out to needy areas of a population, and then some others who have their own agendas, extremists, decide that they will just demolish any good that is trying to be done in that society to rebuild it.
We're talking about the challenges that all this presents to the military personnel themselves, but of course even your own chaplains dealing on a daily basis with the fallout from this, it must lead to a certain degree of burnout, doesn't it, or difficulties for your own chaplains who need in some way to be supported in this challenging work.
Yes, it's as demanding for them as it is for your ordinary serviceman and woman. And we are very privileged to be allowed into the lives of our servicemen and women, to accompany them more often now than ever before into frontline and operational situations. They appreciate our presence. In point of fact, I'm coming across more and more commanding officers who would not dream of going to Iraq or Afghanistan or any operational environment or even on exercise without having a chaplain with them, because they know what that chaplain's contribution is. It's essential that he is there to be able to say to people, as we were saying a moment ago, about atrocities that they see and the frustrations they feel, to reassure servicemen and women that they are still decent people trying to carry out decent orders issued by decent superiors, and to conduct themselves in a decent way in pursuit of a decent cause. And that needs reassuring to them quite often nowadays, and they do turn to their chaplains and to one another, because sometimes the best advisor or the best counsellor that they can rely upon is one of their own mates. And the best counsellor is the person anybody chooses to turn to and lean on. And sometimes they get through things with good humour by turning a difficult situation into something amusing, and the adrenaline flows. But after a while, then when they reflect upon things, they sometimes want to unload their emotions and their feelings to somebody else, and that's where our chaplains are there to help them. So the chaplains, yes, they experience strain and stress and separation from loved ones back home, the same as our servicemen and women. And I don't think any of our chaplains would stand up and claim that they are in a more difficult situation than the servicemen and women. No, they're very happy to accompany them into difficult scenarios, and they're very privileged, as I say, to be allowed into those lives and feel in some way that they are supporting them and helping them through.
Now, you're ministering, of course, to the Catholic people there in the forces, but increasingly this is an interfaith ministry, isn't it?
It has become that way. The members of other faiths are very few in number in our armed forces, but they are a significant presence, and of course they themselves are entitled to have their own ministers, stroke chaplains, if I may call them that. It's perhaps not quite the right word, but they make an enormous contribution, and we try to refer a serviceman or woman to a chaplain of their own faith if one is available and the service conditions and local circumstances permit us to find one in that area and within a certain period of time. But all chaplains nowadays are trained and gain experience in being able to deal with requests or inquiries from any serviceman and woman about most of the things that are affecting them. And we try to do that with sensitivity, try to listen rather than tell them what to do, so that they can get the thing into perspective themselves and perhaps find a way forward themselves, just with our help rather than being too directive about it.
Is it possible, do you think, to give a kind of profile of the average service man or woman today?
They are energetic, highly motivated, highly trained. They wish to put all of that at the service of other people. They want to bring about a better world. And when you go to Iraq for the second time, the third time, the fourth time, it is becoming more difficult to remain focused. But they do feel that they are making a contribution to improvements in that country, despite many setbacks, despite a lot of resistance. But those setbacks and the resistance come from a comparatively small group of extremists, of those who have their own agendas, of those who would prefer anarchy, of those who want their own powerful warlords to be the leaders of the nation, or perhaps not have any government at all. And so that they're working in that kind of environment, and they're very patient, they're very tolerant. They do not want to fire any gun or press a button on any missile. They want to be out and about among people, trying to win hearts and minds to a new way of life. And also to a way of life where they take responsibility themselves for conducting their own affairs, for electing their own national government and local representatives, so that they feel that they own their country, they own the resources and the gifts that their country has got to offer, not only to the populace of that country, but to other countries as well. And that's why our people are there, and they see that, but you're right, I mean, they do feel disappointed at times that the speed of progress is so slow and so difficult and not appreciated by everybody in the country.
And also the tide of public opinion, both in Britain and in the United States, seems to be moving quite strongly against the presence of foreign troops there in Iraq, particularly also Afghanistan. This must add also strong psychological pressures, doesn't it?
It does bring pressure on reviewing our strategies for being there. it also, I think, impels us to move forward as quickly as we can. But if you look at struggles in other countries which have taken 10, 20, even 30 years to resolve and bring the different parties together into unity, we've only been in Iraq for 3 years, and in that time we can't possibly have achieved all that's been achieved in another country over a period of 30 years. And it is difficult, I think, to satisfy everybody in the general public and those who analyse military and political situations. It's difficult to satisfy them with quick fixes. There are no quick fixes. Things take a long time to put in place and to maintain and to keep going despite the setbacks.
Finally, of course, you also minister to the families of servicemen and women back home, don't you? Is that in a way almost more difficult than actually working with the people on the front line, as it were?
Well, the chaplain obviously knows the families before the serviceman or woman from a family goes away, and so he or she, chaplain, will already be aware of certain families that will suffer more acutely because of the separation than other families, and they will attend to them with a particular and sensitive care and try to integrate families with other families so that they get mutual support from one another, and that they use the facilities that are available in our military bases, the social facilities, the medical facilities, the chaplaincy and counselling facilities, that are means of a mutual support in these difficult times. News travels very quickly, and when service families see on television news another incident in a country overseas where they know their wife, their husband, their brother, their sister, their son or daughter is serving, they become immediately worried because that news travels more quickly than the detail of it, and they're often very anxious about, oh, could my loved one be involved in that terrible incident? And they phone one another, and they try and phone the base to get further information, but of course that comes along in much slower time, and in that period of time tensions increase, anxieties increase, and it requires a gentle, fair hand to calm things down and help people to wait and get the truth behind the news.
And my thanks there to Bishop Thomas Byrne, Bishop to the Armed Forces in Great Britain. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Feature Programme for today. We'll be back on the air at this same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us then if you can. And don't forget, you can always find our news and feature programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.